I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. The Philadelphia School District took a big gamble last summer in an attempt to boost the number of substitute teachers willing to come to its schools. It decided to outsource the service to a private firm. As WHYY's Kevin McCoy reports, through the first 4 months of classes, that decision has caused an uproar at schools across the city.
Math and science teacher Kristen Combs has spent months wrestling with herself about taking any time away from work.
I'm like having such intense guilt about ever being out of school that, like, I have this doctor's appointment that I've been supposed to be having for months that I've been putting off and putting off and putting off.
Combs finally decided to make the appointment recently, scheduled for the day after we talked.
And, like, I feel horrible about it, and I feel like I'm completely letting my kids down, and that's insane. It's insane that I feel that much guilt about going to a doctor's appointment that I need to go to.
Combs' guilt is rooted in the fact that she knows it's extremely unlikely that a substitute will come to cover for her. All year, only six subs total have come to Penn Treaty, which is a grades 6 through 12 neighborhood school in Fishtown. That's meant that pretty much every day, the remaining teachers have to use their prep periods to stand in for vacancies.
And so that means that we're basically all covering all the time.
Last school year, on average, for every 100 teachers who called out, the district could only find 64 to fill in. It was that far from stellar number that pushed district leaders to ink a $34 million cost-neutral two-year deal with the Cherry Hill-based firm Source for Teachers. The private firm promised a 75% fill rate by day one and 90% by the new year. But through the first few weeks of school, the fill rate hovered in the teens. Recently, it's peaked in the high 30s, but even that figure masks the paltry fill rates at many individual city schools deemed unattractive by would-be subs.
They didn't look at a provider that was working in comparable districts. They looked at a provider that was working in small suburban districts, and providing substitutes to small suburban districts is just not the same.
Compounding the problem is that it's proved just as difficult for Source for Teachers to fill long-term vacancies. At Penn Treaty, there's been as many as four unfilled long-term positions at the same time. Add a daily absence or two on top of that, and real questions are raised about the school's ability to teach the curricula. Yomari Kiefer is a special education teacher who's been forced to also take on teaching junior and senior level English courses because of ongoing long-term vacancies.
I'm in an area that I'm not certified in teaching, creating lessons so the kids are getting something. So it's been very hectic.
Each day after work, Kiefer struggles to keep up with her special education caseload while trying to teach herself the content of the next day's English lessons. No small feat for a mom of two children under the age of two.
It's hard, and I know it's impacted them because I'm not there as much. And when I am there, I'm physically there, but I'm not really there with them.
As we talked, Kiefer looked exhausted, with tears often welling in her eyes. She said students have commented on how worn down she looks, and she pined a little for her previous job in sales.
It's never ending, the amount of time that it consumes in my life. And I just want a job sometimes that I could just leave at the job and just go home and be me. So there are days when I'm like, do I really want to be here anymore? Is this what I want to do for the rest of my life? But obviously, I do because I come back.
District officials have expressed displeasure with Source for Teachers' performance, but Superintendent William Height says it would be a step backward to cancel the contract and revert back to the old method, which employed subs at higher pay with union protections. Height did say, though, that the district would take back responsibility for long-term subs. He also pointed out that it's the private firm, not the district, which is on the hook to pay teachers extra to cover vacancies during their prep periods. At a November School Reform Commission meeting, Source for Teachers CEO Kenley Davenport said he's confident in the firm's long-term success.
I want to publicly acknowledge that Source for Teachers has underperformed. We have got to do better, and we will do better.
But meanwhile, teachers like Kiefer say they worry most about the toll that the privatization bid has taken on students.
I was talking to them and I said, you know, you guys need to really apply yourself a little bit more. And they say, why? Nobody else cares. So why should we care? And that really stuck with me. And they're right. They see it as nobody wants to be here for them.
For WHYY News, I'm Kevin McCord.
Substitute your lies for facts. I feel as you, your plastic man. I love
As the calendar turns to winter, the northeastern United States is in the waning days of tree planting season. Autumn's the best time to plant because trees then get enough water and rest before expending energy for growth in the spring. Philadelphia has some 130,000 street trees, and like all urban trees, they're especially vulnerable to pests, disease, and lack of water. As State Impact Pennsylvania's Susan Phillips reports, a hidden culprit could also be killing trees.
Here's something most people who work for gas companies know, but the rest of us don't. Gas leaks kill trees. But tree lovers take comfort. There is at least one guy who has made it his mission to save the trees from gas leaks. His name is Bob Ackley, and he drove all the way down from Boston to take me on a tour of my own neighborhood.
It's the first time I've been to Philadelphia, and I've never had a cheesesteak, so, I mean, what the heck?
I met up with him in the historical section of Philadelphia, where all the tourists and schoolchildren flock.
So right in this location, we have one tree dead, two trees dead, third tree weakened, fourth tree weakened, because the gas leaks continue right along this cast iron main.
Cast iron is the culprit here. Philadelphia has about 1,500 miles of cast iron pipes that run underneath streets and connect to buildings. Some were installed 100 years ago, and they leak gas. The city has been replacing them with plastic, but it's expensive and takes time. Some leaks are large enough to get fixed quickly. Others are small, and although harmful to trees, they pose no threat to humans. So the hundreds of small leaks are not high on the list for fixing.
These joint leaks are not typically going to blow your house up, but they will kill your trees.
Ackley has parked his car in front of the National Constitution Center with his blinkers on. He worked for gas utilities for 35 years, and now he's a gas safety consultant. He puts on a hard hat and a yellow vest and safety glasses. He says he wants to look official while blocking traffic.
Don't worry, he's not going to run me over.
His car has a side-view mirror attached with duct tape, but inside is some pretty sophisticated equipment.
We have the Picaro analyzer with the vacuum pump, GPS analyzer, 110 power
supply. Ackley's car is designed to detect methane leaks as he drives. When he started working for a gas utility in Massachusetts 3 decades ago, he was taught to look for dead or dying vegetation in order to sniff out a leak.
So as we look at the street here, we can see the yellow paint marks, and we see there's an 8-inch main that runs right down here.
Ackley says much of his job is visual. Utility workers have an above-the-ground code that tells them what is buried below ground. All those color-coded paint marks with initials and numbers that are sprayed onto the sidewalks and roadways all have a meaning. He also looks for trees with thinning crowns, or those that have no leaves at all. If they lie in a row along a gas pipe, chances are there's a leak that's killing the trees.
And typically we would go very slow. And you can see right here, there's a little round hole in the street. These where they had gas leaks. Now look at, there's a patch, and then you'll see the little drill holes. See the series of them going along the manhole? This is where they had a leak.
The equipment starts to detect a leak nearby.
2036, 2045, and here it is here. Bang. Okay?
But not all trees die from methane poisoning, so he wants to get out into the soil and test the methane levels at the roots. That's where the danger lies.
Okay, so this will get the gas read right here.
Ackley takes out a long, thin pole with a pin at the end of it and starts drilling a small hole next to one of the dying trees. Then he puts a thin hose in the hole, which is connected to equipment that sucks up the air and gives him a gas reading.
540,000 parts per million in the ground, a couple feet from this tree. That's all in the root zone of the tree. That's what's killed this tree.
Now, disease, pests, and storm damage also kill trees. But Ackley says even when that does happen to street trees, it's often because they've been weakened by methane, which deprives the roots of oxygen and dries out the soil. Basically, the trees can't breathe. They weaken and eventually die.
Now, I have an oxygen meter. Let's see what the oxygen level is. And the oxygen level that we're breathing right now should be what?
I don't know.
19 to 21%, or you die. Okay?
It's the same in the soil, so that's what the trees need as well. He takes a measurement.
1.4% oxygen.
That's pretty bad.
Well, the tree's dead.
Like a lot of cities these days, Philadelphia wants to keep up its tree canopy. The city plants between 1,000 and 3,000 new trees each year, and each one costs between $400 to $600. Joan Blaustein is in charge of street trees for the Philadelphia Department of Parks and Recreation. Blaustein agreed that methane could kill a tree over time. But she hadn't made the connection between the thousands of small methane leaks across the city and the health of street trees.
We haven't pinpointed it as a particular issue here, but it's something we can add to the mix as we're trying to ensure that we keep trees as long as we can.
She says most of the city's trees die from old age. Meanwhile, Bob Ackley continues his crusade.
There's other things that kill trees. There's no doubt about that. But when you have gas near a tree, you either have a sick tree or a weakened tree or a dead tree or no tree.
And that, he says, should encourage tree tenders to pay more attention to gas leaks. Susan Phillips, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
Taking a look at this evening's headlines, Philadelphia District Attorney Seth Williams' office is appealing last week's court ruling that threw out the conviction of Monsignor William Lynn.
Our number one concern is to ensure that the conviction remains in place, that he remains in custody. But if necessary, we will ask, we will have another trial.
A three-judge Superior Court panel ordered a new trial for the priest who was accused of covering up child sex abuse incidents in the Catholic Archdiocese. Delaware health officials report an alarming increase in the number of fentanyl-laced heroin overdose deaths. The drug is 50 times more powerful than street heroin. Last year, 11 deaths were reported. Three times that number of fatalities have been reported to the state through September 30th. Philadelphia Mayor-elect Jim Kenney has added another piece to his administration, which takes office next Monday. And Fadalon will be the city's first finance director of planning and development after the cabinet position was approved by voters in November. She'll oversee the zoning and planning agencies in the city. She previously served in Mayor Ed Rendell's administration. Democratic Governor Tom Wolf is planning to make an announcement tomorrow morning about Pennsylvania's state budget as a government impasse threatens to enter its seventh month. The Democrat is considering what to do about an appropriations bill on his desk authorizing hundreds of millions of dollars less than what he wanted for schools and social services. Wolf can sign it. He can veto it. He can also eliminate any of the individual spending items on the list. 42 degrees at 6:18. You're listening to NewsWorks Tonight on WHYY. Anticipate periods of rain overnight, low 38 degrees. Still ahead, after your New Year's Eve party, you may think you're seeing double in the night sky, though it might not be so.
New Year's revelers just getting home in the wee hours of January 1st have a great opportunity to see a whole gaggle of planets over in the eastern sky.
NewsWorks Tonight continues on WHYY.
Ever wondered who's in charge of the confetti that swirls around the ball drop on New Year's Eve?
And I very calmly then say, go confetti, go confetti, go confetti.
It's that guy. I'm Adrienne Hill, New York City on New Year's Eve. Next time on Marketplace from 8 p.m.
Marketplace follows NewsWorks Tonight, starting at 6:30 this evening on WHYY.
I'm Rhonda Hamilton with Toast of the Nation from WBGO and NPR Music. Tune in for Anat Cohen in Boston, Wycliffe Gordon at Newport, Wynton Marcellus in New York, Clark Terry in Chicago, and Diane Reeves in San Francisco. We'll also hear a set from the funk band Snarky Puppy. Come to the party. I hope you'll join us for Toast of the Nation, New Year's Eve, right here on this station.
Thursday night, beginning at 9 on WHYY.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. As the year draws to a close, let's look back at Out of This World highlights with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. Derek, what do you say we start by looking up and waving to astronaut Scott Kelly aboard International Space Station since, wait, is this right, March?
Yes, that's right. He's bound to spend a full year in space along with his Russian counterpart in an effort to generate more data about how the microgravity environment and the confinement of living in a small space affects a human for a year. This is a really interesting experiment that NASA's running because Scott, of course, is the twin brother of NASA astronaut Mark Kelly. So here we have the perfect setup where we have an experimental guinea pig, if you will, in space, in the environment, and we have a control guinea pig here on Earth, the control being Mark and the experimental person being Scott.
Sounds like Scott got the short straw to me.
You know, that's a great question. Maybe yes and maybe no. Some would say that, wow, he gets to spend a whole year in space, and he's done 3 spacewalks so far, and, you know, he's having a pretty good time. Although others would say, and some have said, that it's an arduous task to be in any place in a confined space for 9 months plus.
I understand he's breaking up the tedium in part by watching Game of Thrones and following the presidential campaigns.
Well, you know, it's really interesting how much of the entrapments of home they actually have in space these days. I mean, it's a shirt-sleeve environment. They can get any sort of visual entertainment they want. And I just heard recently that Scott called his brother Mark just last night on cell phone, you know, just to say hi and things like that after the spacewalk to let him know everything went well. But an aspect about this that really is very true is when we look at what happened last week with the launch of the SpaceX Orbcomm satellite mission to deploy a number of satellites and then return the first stage booster rocket to an upright position safely in a soft landing. If you look at these two things, you'd say that the SpaceX events last week are really, really tremendous. But if you think about what Kelly's doing, that's actually where the real heavy lifting is happening, because here we have a human who has volunteered himself for a year in space. This is the longest time that anyone has spent in one go. So I would say that for the future of space exploration and determining how the space environment affects the human body, Kelly's really doing a lot of the heavy work this year in space exploration in terms of helping us better understand how people will be able to survive long trips into the deep solar system, i.e., off to Mars.
And off to Mars would require at least an 18-month round trip.
At least an 18-month round trip, sure, but that is only allowing you about a week on the surface, and who would want to take that short a period of time? It's almost like a rest break on a long car trip. So this is very important data that's being collected, and Scott Kelly really is doing a lot of the big work this year.
Of course, we don't have to wait for mankind to step foot on the red planet. Plenty of good science was dug up there, short of that advance.
You know, the Curiosity rover has been doing amazing work ever since it landed a few years ago now. It has really been helping to nail down so many different mysteries about Mars. We clearly understand that there's water on Mars. We clearly understand that there had been lots of water on Mars. We've been able to find organics on the surface that lead us to believe that there are environments there that may have been conducive to life at one point. And we're getting some better understanding of what happened to the water. How did it leave the planet? And as we continue to gather more information, we can then apply that to what we find at planets orbiting other stars, which is another big place where a lot of great information, astronomical advances have been made throughout the course of the year in identifying more, quote-unquote, Earth-like planets. Not quite Earth-like, but more Earth-like than some of the other what are called hot Jupiters or super-Earths that are much bigger, much hotter, much closer to their star. Nothing really like Earth at all, Dave.
Derek, all good things to you and yours for the new year. Let's do this again next week.
Thank you, Dave. Same to you. We'll see you next time.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight.
You find Earth boring, just the same old, same thing. Come on, sign up without a...
New Year's Day in Philadelphia is famous for one thing above all else, the Mummers Parade. The dance moves and elaborate costumes are certainly a big draw. The music, maybe even more. As WHYY's Aaron Mozell reports, one South Philadelphia man's love for the tradition now extends to the airwaves.
It's the night before Christmas Eve, and Joe Anderson is sitting in the basement of his South Philly row home, right where he's been almost every night at 7 p.m. since Labor Day. Why? Because this is where Anderson broadcasts his internet radio show about the city's oddest tradition, the Mummers.
Good evening, Mumtown, USA. Well, here we are. We are in Mumtown right here in South Philadelphia. And
Mum Radio is seasonal. The broadcasts end a week or so after New Year's Day. And the station isn't all Mummers all the time. Here and there, Anderson throws in hits not played by men in feathered sequin suits, just to break things up.
You ever go to Disney World and you go through a small world, and you, when you leave there, you sing that song over and over and over and over. And it just takes one song to reset your mind, and bam, you're back focused in when the next string band song comes in, or brass band song comes in, or whatever.
Anderson also takes calls and, on occasion, has special guests. Tonight, Monica Haran from the hit TV show Everybody Loves Raymond is plugging a Philadelphia-inspired musical she's in.
You are on the air with DJ Joey Ye here in South Philadelphia, and we have Monica on the air. And, well, Monica, tell us a little bit about yourself, and we'll get into the whole reason why you're calling here in Mumtown, USA.
Hello, Joe. Yes, I will.
Anderson says he started Mum Radio first and foremost to get Mummer music and history out there for Philadelphians or anyone to enjoy. But he also wanted to create a space where people could hear the positive notes of the tradition.
You would hear a lot of not necessarily true things about the Mummers. And you would always hear negative stuff, how Mummers aren't neighborly friendly and how the Mummers are about themselves and they never give back. But the truth of it all is that the Mummers give back more than anybody that I've ever been involved with. They would give you the shirt off their back, even if they don't know you.
Anderson has been a Mummer for almost two decades and plays saxophone with the Avalon String Band. He got his first glimpse of the Mummers during a 4th of July celebration just outside the city in Delaware County, where he grew up. He was hooked.
Once it's in your blood, it's there. It's part of you. It never leaves. You never get tired of it.
Even when Anderson lived in Florida, he would fly back and forth for practices and, of course, the big parade.
When you get involved in these organizations and you've been in them for so long, it does become part of your family. And, you know, the holidays, it's all about seeing family. And the Mummers Parade is obviously, you know, the last big hurrah of the holiday season. And, you know, what place would you rather be? You know, with your family? Yeah, absolutely.
Anderson wants to give listeners those same feelings when they're listening to Mum Radio at home with their loved ones.
Yeah, you know, get people away from reading their books or playing their video games and take that hour time and, you know, do what Mummers do. Have a good time, strut, and love the music at the same time.
I'm Aaron Moselle, WHYY News.
And that's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas, with big help today from John Mussoni and John Ahrens. Find us on iTunes or listen at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.